This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. Our arts project at the Chungshan Building is a new gallery. It is in Kampung Atap, Kuala Lumpur. Right now, it's housing its first exhibition titled Nirmala Dutt, Great Leap Forward. The artist had wanted to be in the opening of the exhibition, which took place last Saturday on January 7th. Plans for the exhibition started more than a year ago, but Nirmala Dutt passed away on December 5th. She was 75 years old. In the studio to share with us about this posthumous exhibition is Simon Soon, the curator, and Melvin Tong, who is pursuing a graduate degree in visual arts at the University of Malaya. Welcome.
Thanks for having us, Soon Heng.
Thanks.
We need to find out first about this Our Arts Project. How did this thing come about?
Okay. Our Arts Project is an arts consultancy that was started in 2013 by Snow Ng and Lisa Ho. Basically, they are the principal tenants of this building that is called Chungshan Building, located in Kampung Atap.
What is an arts consultancy?
So what they do is they organize exhibitions. Very often these are sort of like project-based sort of like consultancy, working with different sort of clienteles, ranging from institutions to sort of private collectors to develop sort of collections, as well as undertaking sort of like private dealership. But now they actually have a physical space. So they are operating as a proper gallery space in the Chungshan Building.
I guess when within the ecosystem you have an arts consultancy, that would seem to suggest that arts is thriving in Malaysia. The visual arts is thriving in Malaysia, and somebody who goes into the system can have a profession that's viable.
I think they're entering into this with some level of trepidation. Obviously, in our current day and age, the economic situation in Malaysia is not exactly rosy, but one is always hopeful, right?
In what ways are you connected to our arts project?
Been sort of signed on as a sort of curatorial associate. So what I do is I help them with certain exhibitions to develop their sort of conceptual as well as the curatorial sort of ideas behind the exhibitions that they put on in the past. So right now with the Nirmala show, they've sort of like invited me to become the curator, and basically I've sort of like worked through some of the ideas with them about and decided together that maybe it is time for us to focus on a specific period of her art production, which is from the mid-80s to the 90s sort of like period. It would be a good way to sort of kickstart the gallery space.
So you come in as a curator, but you're in no way a part of our arts project.
I am sort of considered as a sort of curatorial associate.
Okay, let us jump into this exhibition. It's called The Great Leap. In my research, I was trying to figure out, did I miss something in our Malaysian history that I didn't see that expression? Because I remember about Mao Zedong and The Great Leap Forward. So why The Great Leap? Here's Melvin. Melvin, you're a graduate student studying...
Yeah, I'm currently doing my master's thesis on Nirmala. I'm actually looking at exploring the traditional influences present in her works and how they actually lend a discourse to a case of a sense of national identity. Yeah, so I first discovered to want to do my research on Nirmala early last year. And I then met her in middle of last year, June, July. And unfortunately, until her recent demise, and been only met her a few times, but it's been a great honor to be able to see her for my work. And my research interest is basically on her social commentary artworks and the presence of traditional influences in her works. And of course, this current exhibition in Our Arts is a very timely one, because as it's titled, Great Leap Forward, is actually a period where Mao Zedong had this program to industrialize China and moving away China from a traditional agrarian society to a more industrialized modernization.
And under Mahathir, that was also the same or at least a similar program.
I guess what Nirmala was trying to do is to sort of like draw similarities And while, of course, we were not moving from an agrarian society in the 90s onwards, but in a way, we were like, I guess what she was trying to say is like a point, a pivoting point where a huge change is about to happen. And which was the case because that was when the Asian financial crisis was just around the corner. And also the Commonwealth Games as well, rapid modernization, urbanization and things like that. And illegal loggings that were going on and all these things were actually at the expense of all these people, the underprivileged and marginalized society. So what she was trying to do with her works was to highlight all these things that were going on.
Just at the end of last year too, Ilham also held an exhibition and it was called The Era of Mahathir.
Yes.
Yeah. And right. Part of it was to have works which responded to all the industrialization that was happening then too. Is this exhibition in some ways a kind of a carryover from that or trying to complement that?
It's not sort of in any way in direct conversation with the Era Mahathir exhibition that was put on by Ilham Gallery. But one of Mamala's work from the Great Leap Forward series, which she produced from 1998 onwards, was included in the Era Mahathir show. And I think there is a kind of sort of like, I think she chose this title for a very specific reason. We just experienced the sort of 1997 sort of like Asian financial sort of crisis. So obviously there's a sense of irony, right? The sort of economic development at all costs under Mahathir and Mao Zedong, she saw parallels in these two sort of historical moments.
We already kind of touched a bit about her work, yet most of us don't know much about her. I guess within the art collecting community and within artists, amongst artists, she's a known figure, known not just nationally but internationally. Maybe what we need to do is take a step back and find out who is this woman, who is this international artist, Nirmala Dutt. I'm speaking with curator Simon Soon of Nirmala Dutt. The Great Leap Forward, an art exhibition composed of 14 works by this local visual artist with an international reputation. And Simon is here with a graduate student of art, Melvin Tong, who looked into Nirmala's life and her works, and in particular, the 14 works that are in the exhibition. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, you're listening to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm listening in the studio with Simon Soon, curator, and Melvin Tam, an art student working on his master's at the University of Malaya. And it so happens your focus, Melvin, is on Nirmala. Who is this woman?
I guess that's quite hard to answer, but I would say...
Start with the biography. Where is she from?
She's from Penang. She was born in 1941. She, of course, she had an interest in art from a very young age, and she did colouring, sketching and watercolouring, things like that. She learned it from her uncle. And of course, she went to the US in 66 to 67 for a year before she came back, and then she went back there again in 70, 71. And before she came back, during which time she actually studied and pursued her education in arts.
Can one assume that from the very fact that she spent her time studying art and went to the United States to get her art education, that she came from a background that might be considered privileged?
She came from a pretty privileged background. She loved art from a very young age. And in fact, during her time in school, after school, she even spent some time in Penang General Hospital to help out babies and who were malnourished, and because during that time, I'm not too sure when that was, there were very shortly severely understaffed, so there were not enough nurses to feed the babies. And so she was the president of a neighborhood watch club or something like that, and she actually goes out there and help with her friends and all. So at a very young age, she has already this tendency to do good and be
socially aware
of issues and things like that.
What did her father do for a living?
Apparently her father is a Brahmin priest. Yeah. And her mother, I think the mother was a housewife. So from a very young age, in fact, this has a bearing on the later works, she has been quite intensely exposed to the Hindu stories of the Ramayana and Mahabharata. So that was how she later on caught up with the interest in using wayang kulit in her works, which is also my area of research interest.
Now, Simon, you are the curator. If I'm not mistaken, she wanted to be present at the exhibition herself. So in other words, I assume you spent some time talking to her in the process of putting this exhibition together.
Well, actually, I've only met her once throughout the entire process. It was actually for a previous sort of exhibition. So I never got a chance to really sort of speak to her specifically about how to develop this exhibition. Nevertheless, on that very occasion where I had the chance to sort of talk to her, she recalled very fondly of sort of like taking, you know, bus rides out to Puchong to sort of teach like orphans how to read and things like that. From the 70s onwards, she would be sort of like visiting the slums and eventually would develop a series of sort of like photographic works that are based on, like, you know, her field work and her engagement with, like...
Yeah, it seems to me that her engagement with society and with...
I think she's a very sensitive sort person. Of, like, person.
Yeah, so when she went to the States and she studied art and she then also went to England, what influences from her education brought to bear in her works?
It wasn't until after she came back from the US in the second round, which is 70 to 71, that... she was still doing a lot of abstract works, you know, like painterly works and paintings and such. But then it came a point in time where she realized that all these things do not move her as much as the really real social issues that drive her subsequent works. It was then around in the early 70s that she started going into doing works on socially inclined issues like the squatters and the slum and the pollution that was taking place in the 70s, because you have to understand that in the early 70s, that was when the country was undergoing rapid modernization in accordance to the new economic policy that was already in place. So due to all this rapid development that was going on, pollution is inevitable. So she went around helping children at the slum and she documented them. And in fact, there was one piece which she completed after a four-year period when she just came back from UK, from 75 to 79. Which actually documents the difference in a squatter, a slum nearby, an adjacent housing project, which saw a proliferation of new houses and all. But at the end of the four-year period, the slums that she was documenting 4 years earlier, there were no difference.
Remained the same.
Yeah, remained the same. It was from that point onwards then her intense lobbying for awareness on pollution and things like that. And apparently there are sources that say that it was probably due to her works that set off a cascade of events that of other environmentalists to jump in the bandwagon to do something about the environment. And in fact, you'd be surprised to note that the Ministry of Environment, the Department of Environment, if I'm not mistaken, was only formed at the end of the 70s. So I guess it would be good to know that probably to a certain extent she did contribute to that.
You're saying then that her art triggered enough in the social consciousness.
Well, it's hard
of
to
people.
Say, but it appears so, yeah. Looking at the series and turns of events that happened then in the early 70s.
You mentioned that her early artworks when she was still in America, I mean, she first came back, but they were quite, use the expression, painterly, kind of abstract
expressionist. Yeah, that's what it is.
How did her work change beyond the content to this more socially aware works? How did the style change?
Well, before I talk about the change in style, what I mean by abstract expressionist is that very heavy emphasis on brush strokes and use of color and texture to not necessarily form a very easily identifiable subject matter.
So where representation
It's not so clear. Well, I think that's a very good question, because what triggered the change and the first work that came after that was her Statement 1 in 1973, which was just a three-piece artwork that features a photo documentation of the pollution that was taking place in the old Damansara Road. So what happens is that this piece of artwork, which won her a major award, mind you, and apparently certain sources say that could be considered as the first installation art in Malaysia, and she won a major award for that. And
that was the one in the National Art Gallery.
National Art Gallery, yeah. It was a competition organized by the National Art Gallery, and it's titled Man and His World, and she won that exhibition. And that exhibition is actually a three-part series where the first part, she put together some collages and newspaper clippings of various environmental reports. The second one was a photo montage of 20 different black and white photographs of dumpings that were taking place illegally by the river, by the roadside. And the third part was actually a real heap of rubbish she transported personally into the National Art Gallery. So it was a three-piece work. And you see, you have to understand that back then in the 70s, in this case, 1973, a lot of other painters were doing things like canvas painting, you know, like easel painting, idyllic scenes of a romanticized ideal of a young nation after the war, after the Merdeka. And here comes this lady who was very, mind you, pretty, very much opinionated. And she was very, very driven and was fiery over this work. And she took 6 months to do this work and she presented this. And it was, of course, in huge, stark contrast to the rest of the other artists whose practice was hugely different from hers. So that was how she rose to fame in the Malaysian art scene then, in the 73.
You mentioned that she was this very fiery, very strong-willed woman. And that triggered something that I read about another artist who tweeted out when she passed away about how she was like more bold than most male artists in Malaysia during her time.
I'm not too sure about that, but but based on my a few encounters with her, my first opinion was her was she was very opinionated, especially when she spoke about Wayang Kulit artworks. Her eyes literally lit up. And when she touches on certain memories that came into being, she actually speaks very strongly about certain issues, even to this day, very strongly.
Yeah, this is Yi Yilan. She commented on Twitter. She says, Narmala Dutt is one of Malaysia's finest contemporary artists, more brutal than her male peers, opinionated, confident, brave and fearless. She's an art and a woman hero, and if you don't know her, you don't know Malaysian contemporary art.
That's a fair assessment. Yeah. I mean, female artists are very often sort of sidelined from the larger sort of dominant Malaysian historical narrative, right?
Talking about how her social consciousness or the focus on social works changed her style of the representation.
Well, perhaps I did not address one portion of your question, which is, well, generally her style. Her style is mainly a lot of hard-ish use of very graphical in nature because of her background as a graphic artist. She uses a lot of photo montages, collages, broad paint brushworks, and she uses a lot of allusions to poetry, and she reads a lot. She's a very voracious reader. Very much influenced by John Berger, Herman Hesse, and people like that. And also, she uses a lot of allegory. And because of the very issues that she's trying to address, you have to be indirect. So she uses a lot of that. So very largely, her works are of that style. And she's very well known for her silkscreen works. Yeah.
And that would be non-abstract expressionism. These works?
Well, they are clearly representative. They are not entirely abstract. You will be able to see what is being communicated, you know, especially in the clippings of newspapers, certain words and things like that. And I have to say, it's quite interesting because if you were to go to this art exhibition in Our Arts that's currently happening right now, if you just walk in right the door, right at the end of the wall, you will see one, which is Kampung Polo, which is one of her documentation on the squatters that was going on then and what DBKR was trying to do to demolish the squatter houses. There was this word, Hati Binatang, scribbled across the canvas. It's as though, like, it's a form of her soliloquy, you know, and which is what Dalangs do, you know, puppet masters, you know, and which is also part of her influence in her works. So that's what she does most. And most of her works in her prolific years in the 80s to 90s, I have to say this, it's pretty monochromatic, if you notice at a glance. I guess it goes well with the very nature of the things that she's trying to portray. It has to be such. You can't be using all rosy, beautiful, colourful representation of pictures. Yeah. So I would say pretty much that's a star.
As the curator of her exhibition, what is it you want the viewer to walk away with after looking at her works?
the exhibition is also in some ways topical, right? We're in a period of sort of we're in a period of sort of economic decline. We're facing sort of certain challenges on the economic sort of like front. We're unsure where we are politically, and I think Nirmala's work from the 80s and 90s can be sort of in some ways instructive. It sort of it's sending a message from the past.
As a curator, do such works get collected by private collectors, or because works like this with such strong messages, with such, some might say, well, kind of didactic, mm-hmm. are these works only for institutions to collect?
I think most of her works are collected by institutions. She does have sort of private collectors supporting her practice, but I'm not really a dealer, so I don't know where her works are going to.
In fact, one of her most famous work, titled Friends in Need, is currently in the National Gallery of Singapore, which caused an uproar during the exhibition then, which
Why?
Was taken down. Because it was actually a representation of the... It was a criticism of the Reagan-Thatcher administration and their involvement in the war in Libya and things like that. So, but to answer your question and also to carry on a little bit more forward from what Simon have left off is... Her works are very relevant to social activists nowadays. Her works are actually immortalization of key events and major milestones that happen in our country. And that brings me to my second part of my research, which talks about national identity. National identity and portrayal of identity of who you are doesn't need to be about beautiful things of the country. Bad things and you know, things that are not desirable should equally be as much given and consideration in and appreciating what identity is. If you were to go into her exhibition right now, you will see works by like one piece, which is a Penan landscape, and the other one is a Ma Mary. If you notice, based on what I last checked, currently there are only less than about 1,000 or about 500 Ma Mary indigenous tribe in Kerry Island. Days ago, we've heard the news that besides Northport and Westport, and they're coming in a new drive to actually make Kerry Island the next biggest port industrial city. And this has huge impact on these indigenous tribes. The Penan people, you know, who got themselves into huge trouble, you know, the blockade and things like that, who were imprisoned by the Mahathir administration in 87. And there's a work there in 89. So if any teachers who bring kids to a gallery like this, I'm telling you, it's like a living textbook of Malaysian history. Just look at the work, pick things up from the work and ask. And they can go about searching, why is this, you know, why is this portrayed as such? Who is this old young man, you know, which is one of the orang asli? Why is this lady hugging the kids together? Why? And that is how her work should be seen. And those works of hers currently in the gallery are inquiries to all these different things.
One last question I'm going to put to the both of you. There's a forum that's been organized by an international newspaper, and it's titled Art for Tomorrow. And in smaller print, then it says, how art can contribute to economic growth and enrich social vitality in the public, business and corporate domains. How do you think Nirmala will respond if she were to ask to address a group like that?
My sense is she would probably walk away from the conference. I mean, that conference doesn't hold any stock. For an artist who was always there to sort of challenge the established and official kind of narrative.
Yeah, again, well, I'm not sure if it's jaded or somehow, but she just speaks her mind. I mean, she would just take it on, you know, and she would just speak her mind because she still speaks very strongly of issues. So I don't think she has any problem addressing that.
Nirmala Dutt, great leap forward at our arts project at the Chungsan building in Kampung Atap will run through February 27th. Gallery hours are Mondays to Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Admission is free. Thank you, Simon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, Melvin.
Thank you.
This is Front Row in the Bigger Picture. I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9. Tanpa
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.